In the world of medicine, where every decision can change lives, your peace of mind is crucial. This is where Pattern steps in. Imagine insurance made simple, fast, and personalized, just for you. With Pattern, you're not just getting disability and life insurance, you're ensuring your future and protecting your greatest asset, your income. In the past 10 years, Pattern has transformed the way over 20,000 doctors secure their financial well-being. Discover the simplicity of securing your future at patternlife.com or click the link in the description. Maximize your clinical efficiency and see more patients with no work before or after hours. Find out how. Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's show, we have Dr. Michael Morcos, who's an assistant professor of clinical medicine at the Indiana University School of Medicine, specializing in endocrinology and metabolism. He has a master's in both, two masters in both clinical research and healthcare informatics, neither of which have to do with what we're talking about today, because he wrote a book that is on a topic that's extremely near and dear to my heart. No Work After Hours, Tools to Maintain a Pleasant, Efficient, and Productive Clinic Without Work Before or After Hours. So pleasant, efficient, and productive. Three great words to describe how we all want our day to go. So Dr. Michael Morcos, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much.
So tell us about the book. Why did you write it?
So, you know, the idea of medicine is fascinating, right? We all love medicine. That's why we went to medical school. And seeing patients is a joy by itself. But then there are many things that go into the practice to make it a good practice. Our best dream, I mean, my clinic goes from 8 to 4. So the dream is that I'm going to start the clinic at 8. So I'm at work 7:55, 8. And then by 4, when I'm leaving the clinic, I'm done with everything. I'm done with my notes. I'm done with my charges. I'm done with my inbox or in basket. All of the messages, laughs. So this is a dream, right? You go home, you're done with everything, and the after hours are dedicated to what matters most outside of work. And I'm going to add to that, that you want the clinic to be productive. Productive clinically, the patients get excellent outcomes, and productive financially. I mean, the investment that we put in medicine is so much, so you expect a good return on that investment. So that's why I came up with that logo of, or kind of theme of MD efficacy. Being efficient and effective. So in that book, I talked about efficiency. I talked about patient satisfaction. And then in the coming book, I'm going to talk about revenue, productivity, RVUs, right? So it is that kind of whole package outside of Krebs cycle, right? That we learned, right?
So when you were thinking about writing the book, did you do like a literature review to see if there was anything out there? One of the reasons I'm asking this is because I've done one myself. With my practice, one thing that we're doing is, you know, we're trying to improve. So we're inquiring to the patients, you know, what are the biggest complaints? And of course, everyone knows one of the biggest complaints is that we run behind. And so I looked into it and tried to find if anyone's done research on what causes some physicians to move, let's just say, rather than slower, we'll say less efficiently throughout their workday than others, right? Are there any traits, habits? What is it that makes someone who moves quickly versus someone who moves slowly, right? I didn't find anything. What about you?
Can I expand a bit on the question? So, you know, the two masters that I did, the first in clinical research, just understanding the basics of how to come up with a hypothesis, how to do statistics, how to do analysis, all of this good stuff. Now, when I did the second, the master's in clinical informatics, so I have a computer engineer inside my heart. And I love programming. I love all of this stuff. So that's why I thought the HR going to be fascinating to study. And during that master's, we looked a lot into the research. And the research, I mean, least to say, is so challenging. Because who going to do that research? Many of them are not physicians, right? And many of them are not active clinicians. Because if they enjoy the clinic so much, chances are they will not go into a side career. And then they're going to talk about, okay, how many clicks do physicians do? Okay, how much time do they spend in front of the patient as compared to the HR? How much time are they going to spend the HR after hours? They had all of these studies, but none of them did interventional studies looking at, okay, It's like quality improvement, right? So what is the problem right now? And what are the trials to fix it? There's nothing like that.
So it's not out there. So you're saying, and it won't be out there because the people that are interested in doing the research are not interested in the outcomes of that particular research. But I would argue, what about you? You're someone who's trained in that, who has a particular interest in it.
Right, I love it. A part of me loving it, actually in our fellowship, in the endocrinology fellowship, I came up with a rotation called Business in Medicine. And the idea for that, for the fellows rotating with me, is look, how can you improve your workflow? How can you establish good boundaries? How to manage your inbox? How can you start on time and then finish on time and go home on time? And then how can you optimize your revenue so that you understand the ins and outs, understand the billing and coding? So usually they spend the time with me, and that's during a busy work day, like a busy clinic. And then we follow the concept of walking and talking. So I talk all the time while walking or doing work. So that also, you know, I love learning by modeling rather than just talking about it. So they see me doing it. So I practice what I preach.
So what are some of the barriers? So let's get into this brass tacks advice, right? Into moving efficiently throughout our day. So first, let's talk about what are the major barriers, right? What are the things that tend to slow us down?
I think the very first basis is we are dealing with HR. We are no longer dealing with paper records. So we need to respect this electronic health record and use it for our benefit as a friend instead of an enemy. So if you saw the picture of my book.
Just because this is a podcast, the picture is of Mike standing up at a desk on his computer.
Right, exactly. And then there's that movable cart that you can just put up and down. You can control its height. And what happened is that I love talking to the patients and maintaining the eye contact, right? With these computers that they have in their rooms, that's almost impossible because you're either going to be facing a wall, I mean, a computer with a wall, and the patient is on the side. If the computer is going up and down, chances are the screen is so big that it's going to be between you and the patient, right? So you're going to end up either focusing and maintaining an eye contact with the patient or facing the computer and giving your back or I mean, just not facing the patient, right? And here you are choosing one of two things. Either you are choosing to document while talking to the patient, so you are writing your note so that you are done by the end of the visit, but then the patients are not happy because they feel that you care about the computer more than them, or you face the patient, right? But then your documentation is going to be after the visit. So you are maintaining an excellent patient satisfaction, which should be the case, but then you are behind in your documentation. And if you are having one or two patients waiting, which is usually the case, so you get to choose either hit the next patient or sit down and finish your note, which is going to take like 5-10 minutes, right? This tray is beautiful because what happened is I touch type. So I'm maintaining eye contact with the patient. And the laptop is below the level of the patient. So, and the computer is in front of me.
So it's less of a physical barrier between you and them. There's more like of a physical connection because there's this physical barrier that's no longer in the way. But I hear what you're saying. But what I was taught in medical school was the patient thinks and feels like you're in a rush if you're standing. But if you sit, then they perceive time to move more slowly, and they feel like you've actually spent more time with them. But what you're saying is you're standing up. So how do you reconcile that?
No, I'm sitting. That tray goes up and down.
Oh, so you have it like pretty far down. You're sitting and it's even lower. Okay.
So I think it goes from like, I don't know, let's say maybe like 2.5 feet up to 6 feet. So, or no, not six, maybe 5 feet or so. So it got excellent range. So for those patients, I got very few patients who got like back pain. They're going to be standing. So I'm going to be standing with them. But most of the patients, I sit down and put that tray down. And the computer is kind of very nice for typing. But then I'm maintaining the eye contact.
See, I find one of the major barriers to efficiency is the patients. I mean, they're not a barrier, they're the product, but like I have some patients who are really able to give me a concise history in a very short period of time. I'm able to come up with a diagnosis, they're on board with the diagnosis, and then we're able to move on. And then I go to the next patient, and they're really circuitous about their history, they're really not able to put their finger on it. Maybe they've got multiple diagnoses that they want to discuss, or multiple symptoms of different organ systems that are actually of unrelated problems. And then it turns out that these are all unrelated problems. And then I come up with the diagnosis and a plan, but I really haven't touched on the thing that they're really concerned about. I've touched on their symptoms, but a lot of this stuff really worries them and I haven't addressed it. So there's a lot to the visit where the patient is what causes the time to pass, not the data entry, in my experience. So are there ways in which you address managing that interaction more efficiently?
So if I can ask, what is your visit duration for a new patient and for an established patient, if I can ask?
Sure. 15 minutes, new or established. But remember, you're a specialist too, but you know, I'm not off of internal medicine, so it might be a little different.
Right. Because usually for surgical diagnoses, maybe things are kind of a bit shorter. But then for me, or for our practice, our new patient is usually 40 minutes. And for our established patient is usually 20 minutes. That's the usual for us, and you can imagine that many of us are behind. I mean, it is just by the nature of the diagnosis we see. Now, for me, among the faculty and the group I'm in, I see the new and the established in 20 minutes, and many of the established are in like somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes. And this time includes finishing the note, finishing the charge, finishing everything. I leave the room, and I'm done with everything. And I think what makes my life much faster that I review now being a specialist, I get the referral. So I get to read the notes from the previous doctor or provider who sent them over to me, right? So usually how I start is, now you know that a smile is huge in the encounter, right? So the smile is going to be with me all through the encounter. And when I'm going to start, I'm going to say, let's say, Kevin, it was so nice to meet you today. I learned that I'm seeing you today because of increase in the thyroid hormone level. Let me just get an idea before we move forward. I want to get an idea about your previous diagnoses. I'm not managing them, but just to know what is going on. And then I went through the notes. So let me tell you what I got, and we're going to take it from there. So I learned, for example, that you had unintentional weight loss for the past 6 months, and you felt your heart beating fast, and you felt shaky, and that's happened. Now, I understand that we are talking today about your thyroid, right? So in this, usually it takes a couple of minutes, 2 to 3 minutes. But I went through the whole past medical history. I went through all of the history that I knew so that we are coming from a common ground, and I established the focus what we are talking about today. Now, some patients are going to tell me, you know what? I also have osteoporosis and diabetes that I would like to chat about. And I'm going to tell them, you know what? I want to make sure that you get the best out of time together. And it is really challenging for me because each of them is kind of a separate visit so that I understand what is going on. Let's focus today on the thyroid. And I'm going to write in my note that we're going to talk about this, and I'm going to arrange it with the next visit. And maybe I'm going to order less.
It's really hard to get an appointment with you. It takes me a really long time. I had to take a half a day off from work to come and see you today. So can't we just cover that? You know, I'm already here.
Now, I never got the answer though. And I'm seeing tons of patients. But what I usually do in my schedule, now I still have my slots in 20 minutes. I just overbook. And I'm going to tell them, you know what? I'm going to see you next week. And I'm going to make sure that this is going to happen. And if you get your labs done tomorrow, then we have data for the next visit to talk about it. Now, I think that having good boundaries is crucial. And I talked about it a lot in the book. Now, good boundaries with the patients, good boundaries with the staff, like nursing staff and MAs who run the inbox, and with the leadership and what to do, and good boundaries with myself, that I'm going to say, you know what? No, this will not work. I'm going to have to step up and talk about it. I will not let go anymore.
Leading a medical practice is challenging. There can be reimbursement changes, referral slowdowns, staff turnover, or drama. There are obstacles in the way of achieving your goals, or maybe it feels like you've hit a plateau. Who can you turn to for help with the business of managing a medical practice? The Physician Growth Accelerator, a private practice partner that helps you uncover and overcome constraints in your practice. They will check your business vitals, identify the root cause of what's restricting your growth, prescribe what to do about it, and help you achieve it, just like we do with our patients. Imagine a practice, imagine your practice, where stress is reduced, profits increase, and both patients and staff, and you are happier. They've been making that vision a reality for over a decade. Isn't it time your practice thrived? Discover how at physiciangrowthaccelerator.com. Have you ever seen your colleagues at work, or like, has anyone ever asked you to observe them? Maybe you're observing a resident, maybe it's an attending, and you've had an opportunity to observe other people and notice some things that they could improve about their efficiency.
And that's a great point. Actually, this is a project I'm trying to work on right now in our practice that goes both ways, that people come and observe me to see how I run my practice, and then I go to observe others and give my notes or hints. Now, the biggest challenge is the inertia. This is how I do it. This is how I used to do it. It cannot get better than that. You know what? I have been a faculty or an attendant for 15, 20 years. That's how I'm going to retire. I think this is the biggest problem. On the other hand, I feel that those who get most interested are the trainees, students, residents, and fellows, because they feel that this is their passion, that this is the life they want. Now, I can tell you that I had one resident who was thinking about a different specialty in medicine. And then when he shadowed me in the clinic, he changed his mind. And he thought that endocrinology may be great. And it's very appealing, right?
That's a great feeling. Yes, the residents are definitely the impressionable because they don't have an established practice. They're trying to figure out who they want to emulate. They see someone who's moving efficiently, who's also, as you said, smiling. And you're smiling because you're not being constantly stressed out by all the people in the waiting room and the staff asking you how much longer you're going to be and the patient's complaining, right? So you're naturally going to be happy. And then they compare that to the curmudgeon in the room next door who's running hours behind and that's a really stressful and could be a miserable life. So I could see where they would see the difference and then want to emulate one over the other. Did you ever figure out any type of a solution for moving that inertia, that object that's moving in a direction?
Yeah, in small steps at a time, right? So I love the compound effect. Teeny tiny changes over a big interval of time, I mean, it makes an impact. So I can tell you, for example, that many of my colleagues are following my footsteps and stuff. One of the attendants loved the cart I have, so he asked for one. They loved me, for example, in the revenue. I love tracking my revenue. I have these Excel sheets, and I'm going to do my own statistics and analysis and whatever when I talk to the leadership or whatnot. And many of my colleagues are doing that right now. It just spreads, right? The word spread slowly and grow. Many of the residents who come to shadow at my clinic, now most of the time, I mean, some part we're going to talk about medicine, but I feel that they hear about medicine from everyone. So I talk more about that business aspects, which resonates. Because they know nothing, zero. They don't know what is a level 4 established is based on. They don't know the CMS criteria for that. The concept of boundaries is not there. They understand you are doing a patient a great service. For example, I mean, for endocrinologists like in diabetes, checking the logs like every 1 or 2 weeks and seeing the patients in 3 months. That's for me is a no. I don't check anything in between the visits. They order labs after the visits. This for me is a no-no as well, because it's going to be like the visit is a social time, and then all of the work is after the visit. I don't call patients after visits.
And then also, you know, in terms of billing and coding, you can't, there's some like statute of limitations where if you review the labs like more than a week later or some, I don't know what the rules are offhand, but there's some statute of limitations where you can't bill for that unless you are reviewing the labs and calling the patient and billing for like the telephone call. But like if you're including the labs in the complexity of the visit, they have to be reviewed and discussed at the time or sometime around then. So it's for financial reasons, it's also important to discuss that because your time has value. As you said, boundaries. Like your time has value. And if you're not valuing your time, nobody's going to.
Right. Now, many of my colleagues, whenever they charge level 5, it is based on time, which is more than 40 minutes. Now, I can see a patient in 5 minutes and charge level 5 with one diagnosis.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. You got to know the rules. And the rules are a lot simpler now. The rules are so much simpler now because the physical exam and the history aren't part of it. It's all in the medical decision making. So you should have the CMS rules plastered everywhere you write your notes so that it's easily accessible and you can reference it and you can charge and code appropriately. And soon you won't need it there because you'll have it memorized.
Right. Now it is far simpler than Krebs cycle, definitely. Far simpler.
It actually used to be much more complicated than Krebs cycle because of all that went into it. But now, yeah, it's a lot simpler to learn.
Yeah, and it is so interesting. So back during my fellowship, one of our endocrine societies had a 2-day billing and coding course. And I begged my colleagues and junior faculty to join me to learn. Zero. A big fat zero. No one want to learn. Now, today, in my group, apparently, the level of knowledge is not far away from that. I mean, like many of my colleagues going to charge level 3, along with level 4, like level 3, maybe 15, 20%. I don't remember the last time I charged level 3. They may charge 1 or 2% of what they're doing as level 5. I usually charge maybe anywhere from 15 to 30% of my patients as complex. And it is not that I'm greedy. It is that I understand what I'm dealing with. I understand the complexity of the patients. And it doesn't mean that I'm spending more time. Again, it can be 5 minutes. It can be 10 minutes. But the patient is getting an excellent outcome. I mean, the knowledge and the expertise I got over the years and understanding the CMS rules.
We can do a whole episode on medical decision making. It actually won't be a whole episode because it's not that complicated anymore. Yeah, but again, you didn't write the rules. You just understand them. And I think there's this idea that like there's a gestalt to it of medical decision making of like, well, if it's completely uncomplicated, it's level 2. Just for the listeners, it is level 1. You only charge if you're a PA or a nurse practitioner. You don't charge it as a physician, right? Level 2 is if it's not complex at all. Level 3 is it's a little complicated. Level 4 is it's pretty complicated. And level 5 is it's extraordinarily complicated. And the answer is that is not how the rules are. That's how the rules are supposed to be made. But if you look at them, you know, you might have someone with, you know, acute otitis externa that's febrile. And I'm putting them on, maybe I'll put them on an oral antibiotic. Maybe I'll just put them on drops. We'll talk about the indications for treating otitis externa another time. But that for me would be, I would consider that a level 4 because they're having systemic symptoms and you're putting them on an antibiotic and it's a new diagnosis, right? But that for me, how long does it take me to see otitis externa and figure out the diagnosis? Not very long. But I might have someone who's coming in for dizziness and sometimes my workup of dizziness is not very big. So I might not be doing much of a workup at all, but it might have taken me a long time to pull out of them what their history is, and I won't do as complicated a visit just because the imaging that I don't get, the labs I don't get, the studies I don't get, the medications I don't prescribe don't bring me to as high a level as the otitis externa. So it's all about knowing, as you said, understanding the rules and figuring out where your visits lie. And also, we tend to see the same stuff over and over. So once you know what you do for a certain visit, you just use that same code over and over.
Right, absolutely. But then how can you get level 5 out of a patient with dizziness?
I mean, if I'm not ordering labs, if I'm not ordering imaging, if I'm not ordering a medication, you got me stumped. I don't know.
Let me tell you how I do it with the thyroid and take it from there. Now, there are simple stuff. You work with thyroid nodules, apparently, right? So I'm seeing a new patient with compressive goiter. or kind of large goiter co-centricular deviation. That's a severe goiter, right? Co-centricular deviation is a severe complication. So my first line is going to be notable severe exacerbation with evidence of tracheal deviation due to compressive goiter. So this is high complexity. I reviewed TSH 3T4 total T3 or ordered them. And then I looked at the images, thyroid ultrasound or a CAT scan. That's level 5. That's just simple level 5. Because you met the complexity on the data and you met the complexity on the diagnosis itself. And the idea here is that, again, I'm not making it up. These are the guidelines. I'm treating severe diseases. You're treating severe diseases, but we don't get reimbursed for it because we don't understand the complexity. Now I'm going to take a screenshot of the image and put it in my note.
Have you been audited for the number of level 4s and level 5s that you do? Because the insurance companies look to see who the outliers are and then audit them. So have you been audited and had your coding questioned?
Absolutely. So like 3 years ago, the coding team audited me. They gave me a 97%. I discussed with them the 3% and told them their error because I will not accept below 100%. And then moving forward, no one from the coding team talked to me, although by far I'm the furthest outlier.
Oh, that was an internal audit. That wasn't an external audit.
And then in general, I welcome auditors. I love auditors. I love learning. But with every single patient, I know what I'm charging and I know why I'm coding that level and I defend it in my documentation. You remember the two-day course I told you about? Back to that coder who was teaching us, I was her junior student. She felt that I was a promising coder and auditor because you need to understand the rules to be able to play the game. So for that patient with dizziness who you are seeing, if that patient fell and broke a leg or had that, I mean, like fracture because of falling, especially if they were elderly, or it was during driving and they had to pull over. That's a severe exacerbation due to a disease with high risk for accidents, with high risk for fracture. And then you looked at their MRI or CAT scan. So you reviewed images and you ordered 3 labs. That's severe exacerbation. That's level 5, whether new or established.
So when you're ordering labs, like if you order a BMP, Chem7, is that considered 7 different labs or is that considered 1 lab?
1 lab, because it's 1 CPT code. But if you order, now I'm not telling you to do that, but if you order serum sodium as an order, serum chloride as an order. So, I mean, now usually, I mean, it just depends on the specialty, right? But endocrinology was not existent before the labs existed. I mean, my whole life is dependent on labs. So I need a lot of labs. So for you, if you order CBC, BMP, and coags, for example, or whatever, that's 3 CPT codes. You just need separate CPT codes. If I order a renal panel, that's 1 CPT code. If I order a BMP, an albumin, and phosphorus, that's 3 CPT codes.
I gotta, I thought I knew my coding, but I got to go back and look because I'm clearly undercoding. So Mike, if there's, because we're coming to a close now, if there's one piece of advice you have for our listeners to help us move more efficiently through our day, whatever those major snags are, could you give us one more piece of advice on something we haven't touched on today?
Boundaries. I think boundaries are crucial. Trying to be the nice doctor, you're going to just allow others to cross your territory, the patients to take more time or ask for more requests, the nurses not to do their job, or the leadership to take over and try to push you, and you don't stand for yourself, life can be miserable. Having good boundaries is so important.
Fantastic. So again, the book by Michael Morkos, M-O-R-K-O-S. The book is No Work After Hours, Tools to Maintain a Pleasant, Efficient, and Productive Clinic Without Work Before or After Hours. Dr. Michael Morkos, thank you so much for your time and for writing this book.
No, I appreciate you. I appreciate you. And thank you for the time and thank you for having me today.
Doctors dedicate our lives to caring for others. It's time someone took care of us. Visit patternlife.com to simplify your path to peace of mind. Patternlife.com, simplifying your insurance journey. Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you. This is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.